Self-love is not a feeling. It is a devotion to consciousness. I'm Sister Saya, and this is the Inner Chamber. If I were to choose five of the most important pieces from my body of work, this would be among them. Season one of the Inner Chamber podcast is all about preparing seekers for self-mastery. We're defining ideas and terms, bringing complex practices down to an easily digestible version. This work doesn't need to be overwhelming, but it is like starting a fitness regimen, learning a new language, or a change of lifestyle. Only this occurs within. Learning to be with yourself. And whenever I say be, I mean really be present in all the ways you think you've needed from other people and environments. No one can give it to you. It is verified and experienced within. And the result is a knowing and truth that is unshakable. It's like taking a first breath into a new empowered life. Today, we're discussing self-love as the highest calling there is, because when an individual commits to this path, they are no longer seeking completion, validation, or salvation from the outside world. When self-love is practiced as a devotion, it produces sovereign individuals who relate to wholeness rather than need. And when sovereignty becomes collective, when people meet one another healed rather than hungry, it gives rise to a different kind of world, one rooted in harmony, responsibility, and mutual respect. A world where connection is no longer transactional. Love is no longer demanded, and nothing is taken from one another, only freely shared between integrated, self-realized beings. Most people use the term self-love to describe a state, feeling good about oneself, feeling confident or affirmed, feeling seen, chosen, or valued. But feelings are effects, not causes. To become the sovereign cause means recognizing that inner orientation, belief, and unconscious patterning generate experience, while feelings merely register what has already been set in motion. For example, choosing to examine and transmute a reactive belief before acting places you at cause, whereas reacting emotionally places you at effect. Feelings rise and fall with circumstance, mood, and external response. If self-love were a feeling, it would disappear the moment life applies pressure. What disappears under pressure is not love, but it is dependency. There is a popular misunderstanding about self-love. In contemporary language, it's often framed as self-care rituals, boundary setting without introspection, for example, cutting people off to avoid discomfort rather than examining what reaction or belief is being activated or triggered, curating validating relationships, avoiding people or situations that trigger discomfort. These things are not harmful, but they function as supports and stabilizers, not the source or substance of self-love itself. Think of them as practices of hygiene, not devotion. The self-love I'm speaking of is devotional. It is the daily intentional act of turning inward rather than outward, examining any reaction you may have instead of defending it, meeting the shadow instead of outsourcing worth. Devotion means this: I will not abandon myself to avoid discomfort. This is not indulgent. It is not soothing, and it is not performative. It is fidelity to awareness. Where does suffering actually come from? External events can cause loss, damage, inconvenience, or hardship. Certainly. But suffering arises from the internal relationship to those events. It occurs within the individual and sets a recursive pattern of projection into motion, generating conflict through unmet and unexamined desire. It arises from unexamined reactions, unconscious needs, inherited beliefs about worth, safety, and belonging. Diving a little deeper into this, when someone requires validation, affirmation, or mirroring from others in order to feel whole, that requirement is not love. It is an unexamined wound speaking. Self-love begins the moment you stop asking, "Why don't they see my worth?" and begin asking, "What part of me learned that worth must be reflected back?" At this point, self-realization begins to clarify something essential. The only person who can truly know you is you. Everyone else holds a partial, subjective, and often distorted image, filtered through their own needs, wounds, expectations, and limitations. No one can determine your full potential, verify truth on your behalf, or chart the precise way your nature wishes to unfold. You know how you long to be loved, supported, and cared for, and you can offer that to yourself first, not as isolation, but as instruction. And in doing so, you become an example of what love actually looks like. The most faithful act of self-love is to heal what hurts within you, just as instinctively as you would for someone that you love in your life. Self-realization is the sober recognition that no one is coming to save you, because the capacity to do so has always lived within you. The shadow is not the enemy, avoidance is. Most people believe that self-love means keeping only people who don't trigger you, eliminating discomfort, protecting the ego from friction. But triggers are not attacks. They reveal unconscious belief, unmet need, and the exact point where the shadow is still operating as the hidden drive that controls you. Real self-love is not the absence of shadow activation, because we will always have experiences that challenge our practice of self-mastery. This is why it's a devotion and not a quick fix. It's the transmutation of the shadow itself. To be clear here, transmutation is not imagining or forcing the opposite feeling, but clearly understanding which internal mechanisms, beliefs, and protective strategies are active in that moment, and then consciously changing every layer of the self that reacts. For example, instead of trying to feel confident when criticized, examining the very belief that criticism equals threat instead of just information to examine, then softening the defensive response, and then choosing a different internal posture before engaging the criticism. When the shadow is integrated, it has nothing left to be triggered. Again, you step into becoming a causal force rather than a reactive force. Going further, self-love is not suppressing need. It's understanding where need originates. When you locate the part of the psyche that seeks reflection, seeks reassurance, seeks permission to exist, for example, an early pattern of not feeling good enough unless you're praised, or learning in childhood that love and safety were conditional and had to be earned. So when you bring the perceived need into conscious awareness, the need dissolves. And here's the epiphany of how the shadow is transmuted. The need dissolves not because it's denied, but because it is understood. You've been accustomed to being denied, haven't you? You just wanted to be understood. Well, the magic is in the moment you experience the power of self-love, which is being seen, understood, and held in an unlimited source of love, and that source has always been you. This, my friends, is alchemy. It turns reaction into insight, need into comprehension, dependency into sovereignty. When self-love is practiced as a devotion, a true commitment, reactions soften. Relationships become optional, not necessary. Your worth becomes inherent, never negotiated. And the external world loses its power to define your inner state. This is not isolation. This is coherence. From coherence, connection becomes genuine, not transactional. Let me explain those three lines more deeply. Going within and shedding relationships, environments, and vices is not isolation. It's refinement. It is the intentional removal of what fragments the self so that what remains can come into alignment. Coherence is the state in which your thoughts, emotions, values, and actions are aligned toward truth rather than compensation. Nothing within you is at war with itself. You are no longer divided between what you feel, what you believe, and how you live. I'll state that a little differently. How you secretly feel, what you truly and deeply believe, and how you live your life come into alignment. That is coherence. From coherence, new or healed connections in your life become genuine rather than transactional because you are no longer seeking completion, reassurance, or identity from the world. Instead, you share from wholeness. You become your own source of care, guidance, and stability. Everything else becomes experience, simply information that informs your inner state, not a threat that destabilizes it. This is self-governance. This is sovereignty. And it all begins with self-love. A final distinction I want to make is between self-love and self-esteem. Self-love is not self-esteem. Self-esteem is an evaluation of the self. It answers the question, how do I feel about myself? Because it is evaluative, it remains vulnerable to comparison, success and failure, approval and rejection. Self-love, as devotion, operates at a deeper level. It is not an assessment, but an orientation. It answers a different question entirely. Where does authority live? Where is that within me? When self-love is practiced as self-mastery, self-esteem may arise as a byproduct, but it is not the aim. The deeper results are coherence, inner authority, sovereignty, and self-trust. These are not moods or self-opinions. They are stable conditions of being. They do not fluctuate with circumstance because they are not derived from performance or reflection, but from alignment within. Now, why does self-love come first? Well, without this orientation of self-love, practice becomes coping strategies, which deepens the shadow. Spirituality becomes avoidance, essentially giving up on the self. Self-mastery becomes self-management, endlessly managing crisis while the ego insists that progress is being made. With this orientation of self-love first, every practice becomes an act of self-observation rather than a search for reflection. Every trigger becomes an instruction for where attention, inquiry, and integration are required. And the path turns inward consistently without exception. You're no longer reaching out to the world for your answers or for anything to be reflected back to you. You know who you are. And this, my brothers and sisters, is why self-love is the highest calling there is. When self-love is practiced as devotion, as essential to life as breathing, individuals no longer approach the world from need, lack, or unresolved hunger. They meet life from coherence. And when many individuals live this way, something fundamental changes at the collective level. A world composed of sovereign, self-governing people does not rely on extraction, validation, or emotional demand to function. Harmony emerges not because people are perfected, but because they are responsible for their inner lives. Relationships become places of sharing rather than compensation. Love becomes an offering, not a requirement. This is how the world is changed, not through force, ideology, or control, but through individuals who have healed what drives them unconsciously. No one can give this to you. No one can do this for you. This is the work of self-realization. This is self-love as devotion. This is the beginning of self-mastery. And this is the quiet foundation of a different kind of world. I will end this episode with a bit of a mantra, something to remember as you move forward in self-mastery, as you commit and do this for yourself, the best thing you could ever do for yourself. Self-love is not how I feel about myself. It is how faithfully I return to myself when discomfort arises. Self-care is supportive. Validation is circumstantial. Devotion is transformational. My human family, you are what you've been seeking. This is Sister Saya. Until next time.